Welcome to the Science Podcast. It's February 16th, 2013. I'm Sarah Crespi, and this is a special podcast from the AAAS annual meeting in Boston. I'm here at the AAAS meeting with David Grimm, online editor for Science News. He's going to tell us a little bit about what's been going on at the meeting.
Well, Sarah, it's been pretty exciting so far. One of my favorite stories from yesterday was about how to get kids to eat their vegetables. This is a perennial problem, and it turns out maybe makes a lot of sense. The way to get kids to eat vegetables is to put sugar on them. And actually, that's kind of a bit surprising because researchers have tried other things. They've tried cheese, they've tried education campaigns, and none of that stuff really works. But they found if they just spray a bit of sugar, and it's actually about a fraction of a teaspoon, so it's really not enough sugar to really add a lot of calories to these foods, the kids really preferred to eat their vegetables.
What kind of vegetables are we talking about here?
We're talking about all the good vegetables. Broccoli, Brussels sprouts, kale, asparagus. All the stuff the kids don't want to eat because it tastes bitter to them. But the thing that sugar does is it actually does a really good job, even in minute amounts, of masking the bitterness. So what's really cool is that researchers can just spray a little bit of sugar on the vegetables, and it seems to make a huge difference in how much the kids eat.
So is this something they're recommending that parents try at home?
I don't think they're recommending that yet. I think they still want to do a little bit more research on it. But they're saying this could be really good for school cafeterias where, you know, there's concern about, you know, what are kids eating when their parents aren't around. And if you can make vegetables a lot more palatable and fun, maybe not fun, but at least more palatable for kids, they seem to be a lot more likely to eat them.
So next up, we have a story about how fish are being exposed to things that they're not supposed to be exposed to.
Well, right, Sarah. It turns out a lot of the pharmaceuticals we use and throw away don't just disappear. They actually seep into waterways, rivers, streams, things like that. And there are things that live in those streams. And there's been a question for a long time, what do these medications, specifically in this study, what do anti-anxiety medications, what impact do they have on the fish swimming in these environments?
Well, I don't know that fish are particularly known for anxious behavior. Is there a way to actually test how they're reacting to this?
Indeed, there is. The researchers gave fish one of these anti-anxiety drugs. It's called oxapam, and it's a drug that people use to reduce panic attacks or other severe anxiety disorders. It's a pretty powerful anti-anxiety drug, and what they found is it actually does change the behavior of fish. So they're looking at the behavior of these European perch exposed to oxapam. One of the things they notice is the fish stop shoaling. This is a social behavior that keeps schools of fish together and protects them from predators. The fish that were exposed to the drug actually started to swim solo. They actually were also a lot more riskier in their behavior. They went to novel environments, types of environments that could potentially be dangerous to them. They were a lot more willing to do that. And one other thing is that the fish were much greedier and they were much more efficient feeders. They darted after food with a lot more vigor than the drug-free fish. So there were definitely changes in behavior that these researchers could see. And these behaviors sort of make sense when you consider that these drugs are anti-anxiety drugs. The fish are really acting a lot more, well, a lot less anxious than they would usually.
Right. It's really interesting because it's not poisoning the fish, killing them off. It's changing their behavior in subtle ways that may have impacts on their population. Well, how common is it for these kinds of drugs to be in the environment?
Well, Sarah, there's actually hundreds of different pharmaceuticals that are able to slip past conventional wastewater treatment plants and get into the waterways. So it's not just a concern for this one drug, oxapam. It could really be a concern for a lot of pharmaceuticals and other types of drugs that we take. You know, again, these drugs don't just disappear once we've stopped using them. They go in and it can affect a variety of other animals. That's at least what this study is indicating.
Really interesting. So the next story we're going to talk about is actually about ancient evidence of what's left behind by animals.
Right. Well, it turns out that ancient pee, for lack of a better word, can actually shed light on ancient climate. This story has to do with a creature known as the rock hyrax, which is a furry mammal, looks like a large groundhog. It's actually a distant cousin of the elephant. And these animals live in Africa, and it turns out generation after generation have been living in the same place for thousands of years. And when they excrete urine, their urine contains a lot of particles, pollen, calcium remnants, charcoal particles, stable isotopes, and other detritus, which builds up over time. And researchers could actually look at that. And in this new study, they actually were able to look back by analyzing these various components of ancient urine. They were able to look back at the climate of southern Africa 12,000 years ago. And researchers used to think that around this time, the continent or this part of the continent was actually fairly arid. But what they're seeing in this hyrax urine is actually, they see a lot of evidence of a grassy diet, which indicates that the conditions may have been a lot wetter in this region of the world than scientists previously thought.
There's a lot of ways of looking at climate in the past. What made the researchers decide to use this tactic?
Well, researchers in the past have looked at things like core samples and pollen content, but parts of this area of Africa are too dry to preserve some of that evidence. And so they were able to actually see a lot of more evidence preserved, strangely, in hyrax urine than in some of these other methods. And what's cool about it is they say, you know, it's not just for this study. You know, now scientists can actually maybe use waste from this animal or other animals to study ancient climate in various parts of the world.
Great, Dave. So we've only been here for a couple days. There are a few more to go. Can you tell us what's coming up?
Right. Well, Sarah, we've got some stories, really cool stories coming up. One is about why supermarket tomatoes are so tasteless and what we might be able to do to improve the taste. Also, a really cool video we've got on the site about watching cells in real time and actually seeing things like their membranes ruffle and how that could give clues to cancer and other diseases. And of course, we're doing our Google Hangouts from the meeting. These are live video chats. We just did one yesterday on the future of physics, and today we're doing one on the scars of human evolution. What are some of the downsides of becoming human? So be sure to check out all these stories on our site.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Sarah.
That was David Grimm giving us a rundown of some of the latest stories from Science Now. You can read all these stories, see 6-second science videos, live Google Hangouts, and more from the meeting at news.sciencemag.org. Thanks for listening to the Science Podcast. I'm Sarah Crespi. Check back on iTunes, the RSS feed, or the Science site for more podcasts from the meeting.